Welcome back to Recovering from Everything, a podcast for everyone who has ever had anything happen to them ever. It's been like a month, you guys, since I uploaded an episode, and I apologize for that, but I've been building my business, which consumes a lot of my time, and I love it, but again, lots of time consumption, living my life, also love that for me, and working through lots of shit. Don't love that so much, but I do have faith that it is for my own greater good. I could probably hammer out a few episodes with the things that have gone on in the last 4 weeks, but we'll start with this one because I think I'm done, or at least on the tail end of processing it. And I also just kind of want to close the door on like getting this out of my system. So here we go. Some of the OG listeners will remember the episode I did with my friend Lauren called The Biggest Losers, where we went over the single worst relationships we've ever been in. Hers was the absolute winner because this guy like glued her doors and windows shut and like spray painted hate speech all over her home and then lit her property on fire. Not that it was a competition, but like, damn, Lauren, gold medal. Anyways, it's a great episode. It's still in my top three most listened to episodes. So if you haven't listened to it, stop here. Go listen to that now if you haven't yet. Season one, it's really early. I think it's maybe like episode 3 or 4. Like it's right when I first started the pod. Anyway, my story was about this particular boy. I should say legally, he is a man because he was 40. Ish when we dated, but I will continue to call him a boy for all the reasons you are probably thinking in your head right now. So I've had him blocked on everything for about 4 years. And like, I mean everything, like LinkedIn even. I'm not even sure if he had a LinkedIn account because that would require some sort of professional career ambition. But basically anyone in the world who shared his first name and last initial got blocked by me. That's like generally how I operate when I'm intentionally removing someone from my life. But this one, it was like a bit more extreme. So I think it's a Scorpio thing, to be honest. So blocked on everything for the past 4 years. But driving through my town and going into my local Shoppers Drug Mart, which is the last place I saw him and I hid, were like huge triggers for me to feel anxious and paranoid. And, you know, I would see something similar to his car and I would look at the license plate and like look at the car's color. And like, I was just always like, and then like look at the driver. And anytime I pulled into the parking lot of Shoppers Drug Mart, my like heart and stomach would like flip flop. Because, you know, last time I saw him was at Shoppers Drug Mart and I was like unprepared to see him. And so now I think when I go into the Shoppers Drug Mart parking lot, my body is like trying to prepare itself. I believe it's called fight or flight. Super annoying, but it is what it is. I had accepted that. So in late February and early March, there were all these triggers that led me to thinking about him or talking about him. Like, he just kept jumping to the top of my mind and I was like so annoyed by it. If anyone watched that Risa Tisa series on TikTok called Who the Fuck Did I Marry? So that one was like really inspiring for me. It also brought up a lot of like old memories. And so for a couple weeks, I was toying with the idea of doing a podcast where I was going to release these like old crazy voicemails that he sent me. Anyway, a bunch of things like kept happening where I was like, oh my God, he like literally still won't leave me alone. Like, he's just like, get out of my head kind of thing. And one morning I decided to see what he was up to hopefully just close the door on whatever was happening in my brain. Like, I was like, okay, you know, you keep thinking about him. You want to know what's up here. I'm going to give it to you. Like, let's just do this and close that door finally. Maybe that makes sense. Maybe that doesn't for you, whatever. I didn't unblock him, but I just like put his name into Facebook search and up popped a bunch of in memoriam posts. He had passed away last summer. He died. He's dead. So let's get into it. I've never had anyone I've truly hated die before. And so what followed can only be described as the biggest mindfuck ever. This isn't an episode about how shitty this person is. That would be like 4 episodes, to be honest. This is an episode about how shitty I became when I realized he had died. Because I am a real human with complex emotions who's been going through some shit, and I am sure there are others just like me, you guys know that I am about to give you raw and honest content. This is a judgment-free zone. Moving forward. Obviously, I took it to Google. I found a few obituaries, and each obit ended with donations can be made to, and the name of the rehab where he had gone 10 billion times. It was the same rehab he went to after the police visited him one final time to tell him he had to stop leaving me crazy voicemails. And just a quick sidebar, actually, to Apple. And if you have an iPhone, you might already know this. Apple, if I block someone, please stop letting them go right to my voicemail. I don't want voicemails from someone I've blocked. I've blocked them. This doesn't make any sense. And what resulted was this idiot thinking that it is a sign that I still wanted to hear his voice. And so he left me like 10 voicemails, progressively getting more drunk and more creepy. Apple, please rectify the situation. So he called me from his mom's phone, who I hadn't blocked yet, but I sure as shit did later that day, and said he was going back to this rehab and that if I needed to, I could reach him there. Let me get right on that. Then probably like a month later, I found this hidden bottle of whiskey in my laundry room, like tucked away, and it was empty. And I would be lying if I said I didn't think about mailing that shit right to his rehab with a note that said, "You forgot this at my house." Anger, I think, makes me like extra funny in like an extremely dark way. It is what it is. I am who I am. I didn't like act on it, obviously. You guys are just getting kind of like the inside scoop on my brain activity. So among the obituaries was an article from CBC a few years ago, I think like 3 years ago, and they'd done an awareness kind of piece on this like halfway house that he'd been a resident in, it said, for the past 2 weeks. And it's for people with substance use and mental health issues, basically like a bridge the gap thing between like rehab and moving on to your like real life. And CBC had interviewed him because he was a part of this like awareness campaign, and he'd prepared like a whole skit where during the presentation to the community, he pretended to like have this big freak out because he was like, you know, so scared of going to rehab. And I guess it was supposed to provide some insight for people in, you know, into the emotional turmoil of getting help. The skit was cringy as fuck for me to watch because I've seen him freak out like that, like just like that, so many times. But, you know, I'm sure the people in attendance were wowed by his incredible acting skills. So CBC ended up interviewing him afterwards, and I swear, like some vomit collected in my mouth, like hearing his voice and watching his mannerisms again, the way he would like adjust his gaze when he was trying to get you to believe something he is saying, like it was just like flashback city. He also started crying when talking about how much help addicts need in his city, but he's an actor and he can cry on command. And like, I was not personally buying any of it, but I, you know, CBC probably loved it. Anyways, so they had filmed the skit, they had interviewed him on video, and then they had like included some quotes from him in writing. And they had written that while being a resident of this halfway home, that he reported being in recovery for 10 years. I lost my fucking mind reading that. So some backstory here is that I often tell people that there's like a huge difference between sobriety and recovery. And sobriety is abstinence, and you can count your days sober or whatever. And recovery is like the healing portion, and it's not as tangible as, you know, counting days in sobriety. You can be not sober and still be trying to recover or in recovery from something. You could be in recovery from trauma, and as you work through your trauma, your sobriety maybe is the next step or whatever. Huge advocate for this type of thinking. So just because you're not sober doesn't mean you're not making some progress somewhere in your recovery. But when I read that he had told CBC he was in recovery for 10 years, all of my principles no longer applied. I mean, they applied to everyone else in the world, just not to him. Recovery for 10 years, my ass. First and foremost, no, not in recovery from anything. Second, he'd been in and out of rehabs for over 20 years, not 10. So nothing in that sentence is true. As you can see, I got dark. I got ugly. I forgot my values. I was fueled by rage. Kind of like when I was in a relationship with him. For whatever reason, I will not allow this person to be a human. I don't believe he was in recovery from anything. I don't believe he was working on himself in any capacity. I believe he acted his way through the recovery community. I believe it was all for show. Gross, right? Like, I just can't seem to find the human in him. My brain won't let me go there. And believe me, like, I tried. I feel like an absolute monster having these feelings and thoughts about a dead person. Someone who had most likely succumbed to his own addictions in some way. Now, I have had dozens of people die since I've been in this world of recovery. No joke. And I always have this pang of sadness when someone dies. And I'm absolutely more desensitized to it than the average person, for sure. But there's still like a nagging feeling of sadness that like a whole human lived in pain and chaos for their entire lives until that life suddenly ended. And they would never get the chance to create and build and shape like a life that has like actual joy and happiness and peace in it. I feel sad when people die because of addiction. But not with him. Not with him. I couldn't get there. I mean, I still can't. And I'm the type of person who can sympathize with like serial killers. Like Ed Kemper, my favorite serial killer, super sad childhood. Didn't have to be that way. His, you know, life in prison and all the murders and everything didn't have to happen. That was like a sad, ruined child. But with this guy I dated, nothing. I read the comments on the obituaries, and I read every comment on every memorial post on Facebook. people declaring his kindness and respecting his work as an actor and how much fun it was to spend time with him. And I was furious. Anyway, I unblocked him on Facebook. I went through every single post he had made publicly since we broke up. I went through our chat history. I really turned to the chaos to fuel my rage pretty damn hard for like a few days, you guys. And all of that amidst working and living my best damn life. Goes to show, you never truly know what people are going through, you know? And when I ran out of information, when I ran out of posts I hadn't seen yet, I unblocked his mother. Fuck, you guys. His mom is a saint. She was always the best human being, like so loving. She told me she loved me before he did, actually, which was a little weird to me at the time, but I grew to learn that she was just genuinely a very loving person. We spent a lot of time with his mom, and many times it was just me and her. She is interesting. She could talk about anything and everything. And I often felt like she worried about losing me. Like she knew what her kid was capable of. And so sometimes I felt this energy of like, she both feared losing me, but also resented me for setting him off or for fighting back. And something embarrassing actually is we broke up once and called the cops then, and I got back together with him. Don't judge me there, and I won't judge you, because that is the cycle. I think it takes like 7 times, I think is the statistic, before a woman will actually leave. So I was, you know, I was on time number 2. So as we were getting back together, I expressed like sorry that if the cop thing was like a little much. That's so embarrassing for me to even say that, honestly, that I was like, sorry, I call the cops. But he was like, you should probably apologize to my parents too. Your parents should apologize to me for raising such a monster. Anyways, okay. I loved his mom. I think there was certainly a level of resentment between the two of us for various reasons. Anyways, she is the only person in all of this who softened my heart a bit. Her child had died. Her most recent Facebook post was a poem that she had shared about knowing that someone is watching her from heaven and is like always with her. That's a mom who lost her child. She never like outright expressed her pain on her public Facebook posts. But she shared a lot of other people's posts and would just express gratitude for anyone who had shared something kind about him. Actually, one of the public posts from his like local theater company or whatever had a post announcing his death that said, quote, he was a remarkably gifted actor, an improv artist, blah, 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 and then added this last paragraph at the very end. If you're someone who feels inclined to say something negative about someone after their tragic passing, we're not interested. Please go somewhere else. And I really wonder what their experience was with him to have written that. His mom reposted that with just a simple thank you. So thinking about his mom softened my heart, not at him, but just generally, which I needed because I was bordering on monster territory, and I recognize that I'm bordering on that right now recording this podcast. And like, who thinks this way after someone's tragic passing? Who says these things? Like who talks like this? after someone dies? Well, these people's victims, that's who. I never got any form of apology, accountability. He never took responsibility. He just went about his life while I had cameras installed, formed a very lovely and supportive relationship with my local police services, went back to therapy, had my curtains closed at all times for like weeks, didn't trust men. I didn't feel safe. I went back to my old ways when I was angry. I dealt with the guilt and the shame of that. I got a panic disorder where my heart rate would go up and suddenly I would start crying out of nowhere. He just gets to do whatever he wants and then leave the planet. Cool. Like I said, my brain will not allow me to feel an ounce of softness for this man's tragic life and tragic passing. Clearly, the realization of his departure from Earth opened up some old wounds. I think whatever I had not felt yet or processed 4 years ago, simply because I didn't have to, I was like moving forward and, you know, I was in therapy for codependency, I was learning, I was growing. All of it was being brought to the surface and moved through me and out of me for the past few weeks. And that's how I allowed myself to feel what I needed to feel and say what I needed to say. That's what's happening with this podcast. I won't not process my stuff. I won't protect abusers. I have a whole story to tell. Something really bad happened to me 4 years ago, and that version of me still had some coping to do. I worked really fucking hard to make sure I never end up with a man who makes me feel small in any way. And I'm really proud of that and the woman I have become. But that old, scared, angry version of me still needed a bit more airtime before she could finally get some peace. In addition to all of that, I think this guy represented a bunch of my behaviors that I work really hard to manage. Explosive anger, check. Ability to lie, check. Smile on the outside while seething with rage on the inside, check, check. You know, I don't much enjoy being reminded of my more gross qualities because deep down, I still fear that they will come out when I least expect it. But honestly, like if I'm being really honest, I don't like hate those qualities about myself. So I've done something called shadow work and shadow integration a lot in the past, like pretty aggressively. And if you're someone who hates themselves deep down, I highly recommend this for you. So shadow work allows me to take all the stuff I hide about myself, all the stuff I don't like that I stuff, you know, away deep down in the crevices of my, you know, soul. And it allows me to bring all that stuff up to the surface. And then I find a way to integrate it into my everyday life. So like to love it so that I am a whole, complete, authentic person. And if I'm looking at my explosive anger and my rage, those things truly only come out when I need to protect myself. So like if someone intentionally hurts me, I will eat you alive with my words. And then I will cut you off forever. And that sort of self-protection, priceless. Priceless. But still, I do acknowledge that the person I became while I was in that relationship was not a healthy version of myself. I was very reactive, protective, nervous, fearful, angry. But damn, she fought back hard. And I love that about myself. Even to this day, like I will protect myself. I will advocate for myself. I will show myself respect and I will demand it from others. And that whole situation also pushed me to go back to therapy after like, I don't know, a year and a half hiatus. And I learned a lot and I changed a lot in the way I behave in relationships, whether they're romantic, platonic, or my bio family. I try to do no harm, but also take no shit. In the past few weeks, I got to work through a ton of leftover shame and guilt and embarrassment of putting myself through that relationship, letting my daughter get close to someone who is such a loose cannon, the shame of fighting so hard to keep the relationship with someone who is so fucking sick, and the shame of knowing better but not doing better. I grew up in a physically and verbally violent home. My parents are still married to this day, and we still have a relationship, actually. But I would never have dreamed of protecting myself or fighting back, let alone involving the police when I was young. Didn't have it in me. Did not think that even that was a thing. And so part of me is ashamed that I put myself through something so similar, like repeating those patterns, and that I let my daughter get so close to someone who was capable of the same madness that I grew up in. But another part of me is really proud that I stood up for myself and my inner child and did what I had to do to get that creep out of my life. I cut it off after 4 months. Like, it went chaotic very quickly and I ended it. My daughter will never have to experience something like that. For about a year or two after, she would ask about him. And slowly but surely, I told her that he would sometimes be mean to me, and no one gets to be mean to me, and people who are mean to us don't get to stay in our lives. And I'm comfortable and happy with the way I handled that. He never acted that way around her, and I hesitate to say that again because I don't want to let myself think of him as a human. But he was very sweet with her and very warm, and I do think he had a genuine love for her. But that's how he was with me at the beginning too. And so I can be sure that it was only a matter of time before he would turn on her also. The internet says, grief is feeling the impact of a loss of someone. I've had about 3 weeks to think about it. Here's what I have lost. An activated nervous system when I see Jeeps in my town or when I go into Shoppers Drug Mart. And actually, I've gone to Shoppers since, but my heart still does not accept fully that he is dead, so it still does like the flip-flop thing. I also have lost further ignorance of my own shame, leftover anger, all of that. I've lost my fear. And one final thing that I intentionally lost due to the loss of this person. So I took all my old diaries, countless entries about him, including a very angry 4-page letter to him after I found the hidden bottle of whiskey tucked away in my laundry room about a month after the relationship finally ended. I remember that letter felt so good to write, and reading it again actually made me laugh because I had like some really good insults in there. It was like I could finally say all the things that I was ignoring or rationalizing like while I was in the relationship. But my old diaries also contained information about a lot of people in my past, past versions of some of them or past versions of me that I needed to finally put to rest. I didn't even recognize myself in those diaries, like other men, old friends, old versions of my parents, like there was just so much confusion and questions, and then like gaslighting myself into gratitude or like thinking there was something wrong with me, you know, despite being very uncomfortable in many of those relationships with some people who were just like really toxic to me. And like the girl in those diaries worked extremely hard to turn herself into the woman I am today. And I don't want to keep like resurrecting her, having these journals on hand. Like I don't want to be able to feel her pain, to reawaken her traumas and her heartache and her confusion and her darkness like over and over anytime I want to. I want to just like let her rest. She deserves it. So I took all those diaries. I think it was like 4 like full diaries, and I burned them. Yep. Had a little fire in my backyard, burned them with a smile. And I get to feel the loss of that too. And let me tell you, it feels fucking fantastic. Thanks for listening to another episode of Recovering from Everything, a podcast for everyone who has ever had anything happen to them ever, even the death of someone you hate. Don't let monsters make a monster out of you, my loves. Accept yourself as having a human experience. Remind yourself that your feelings are just temporary. Do what you need to do to show up for yourself with love and keep creating your beautiful life. Whatever you need to let go of for you to find peace, do it. Burn things, record things, whatever you need. You deserve to rest in peace too. And if anyone from Apple is listening, for the love of everything good, stop letting blocked numbers leave voicemails. See you soon. Oh, one more thing. Here are the voicemails. Well, some of them. A few of them I've omitted because they have personal information about my family. Hard to explain that one. I recorded these in case I needed them as evidence and emailed these to one of my friends 4 years ago in case anything ever happened to me. I want you guys to promise me one thing. If anyone ever does this to you after you've told them to stop, call your local police dispatch. You don't necessarily need 911, but your police dispatch will send a couple of officers over to handle it. Get it on record, get things in writing, texts, whatever, and don't deal with this on your own. It's too big and you don't have to. Tell as many people as you can in case anything happens to you. So, the voicemails. In the middle of him leaving me one of these voicemails, I quickly unblock him. I text him, "If you leave me another voicemail, I will call the police," and then quickly block him again. You can actually hear which voicemail it's in. I think it's like the 3rd or 4th one. That was in the morning. That night, I had a therapy session and my therapist taught me about boundaries. And she said, "You said you were going to call the police if he left you another voicemail. It's now your responsibility to follow through on that." I said, "Absolutely, I will do it," not thinking that I would ever have to do it. But when I got out of therapy an hour later, I had 3 new voicemails. So I called the police dispatch that night and truly, I'm grateful for it. And just a little warning, if this is too dark for you, me releasing these voicemails, or maybe it's too much in like a morally gray area, just stop this episode now. Don't do it. If this is making you uncomfortable, just don't do it. If you're here for it, if you're here for the tea, if you're here to see what major warning signs look like, if you're here to see what cross boundaries look like, or if you need to evaluate the health of your own relationship, here are some of the voicemails.
Hey, it's really interesting how, like, you want to hear my voice, but you don't want me to call. That's fucked up. You're fucked up.
To erase this message, press 7. Ready to call 1519270. Next saved message.
And you use your little girl. Yeah. You use your little girl.
To erase this message, press 7. Next saved message.
And you look so beautiful in your summer dress. And I can't even explain how much you love me. Summer will, and you can drop me, but you can't. Oh, you never will, because of my voice, and that every summer. That we will. I love you. And I will till the day we die.
To erase this message, press 7. To reply, ready to call 15192. Next saved message.
Hi, you reached Kinga. Sorry I missed your call. I will. Fuck you.
To erase this message, press 7. Next saved message.
I fucking hate you.
To erase this message, press 7. To reply to it.
That's it. I'll be deleting these from my phone, from my email outbox permanently, and just like I did with the diaries, letting this part of my past rest in peace. I never re-listen to my podcasts, so I don't really have to worry about hearing any of this ever again. He can also rest in peace now. No more hate from me, no more anger, no more anything. Just quiet.